If you'll take your seats, please. Good morning and welcome to our June 6th meeting. Happy Election Day. If you all stand up, please, and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any changes to our calendar, Madam Clerk?
You have a couple of changes to today's calendar. Under added items for closed session, under pending litigation, you have items 13, Gurian versus County of San Luis Obispo, and 14, San Luis Obispo County Mothers for Peace et al. Versus U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Under conference with real property negotiator, you're going to negotiate regarding property description at 4398 Santa Fe Road, San Luis Obispo, APN 076-371-012. Property with whom negotiating, James P. and Carolyn J. Philbin. Instruction to negotiator will concern terms and conditions of sale. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Under added hearing items, you have item C7, hearing to consider the use of Justice Assistance Grant JAG program funds and amend the operational budget to include additional equipment for the regional firearms simulator trailer and other sheriff department supplies and approve a budget adjustment from unanticipated revenue in the amount of $12,362. Recommend this item be continued to July 25, 2006. This item was noticed for today's meeting, was it inadvertently left off today's agenda. Your board is being asked to consider adding this item to today's agenda. The need to add this item arose subsequent to the 72-hour noticing requirement of the Brown Act, and the need for placement on the agenda of your board's agenda is contained in the item itself. Your board is to take action on a motion for the need to place this item on today's agenda and a motion to add the item, both of which can be combined into one motion, and a unanimous vote of the board members present is required to add this item to the agenda. Staff is requesting that this item be heard following the consent agenda. That's all your changes for today.
But we should take the vote at this time.
Chairman, I would move that we add the item to the agenda.
I'll second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous. Next item is presentation. Motion.
Move to accept the presentation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Again, unanimous. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the public comment period. I don't have any requests to speak. Mr. Dugan, go ahead. Give us your name for the record, and we'll take this slip. Okay, Mr. Dugan, we want to, if you allow us a minute or two, I'll call you back.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. I didn't have the plaque, and I was waiting till it comes forward, went to the public comment. Do we have it available as we speak?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you please come forward and introduce yourself and give us your name for the record? And
did you want this?
Good morning. My name is Bill White, and I am a fire captain paramedic with the Atascadero City Fire Department. I'm also the past president of the San Luis Obispo County Training Officers Association. It gives me great pleasure to come before you to present the 2005 Instructor of the Year Award. This award is sponsored by the San Luis Obispo County Fire Service Training Officers Association and is the highest recognition the association can bestow upon a member. Presented for the first time in 1996, the award is for an individual with a distinguished career with the San Luis Obispo County Fire Service Training Officers Association as a mentor and facilitator of training. The Instructor of the Year consists of an inscribed plaque for the individual and a perpetual plaque for the individual's department. The Instructor of the Year embodies the highest standards in training program and or material development, demonstrates outstanding performance as an instructor, speaker, or trainer, and contributes to the professional image of the fire service. The Instructor of the Year is an important reminder of the contributions that fire service instructors make to the education of the people who protect our county citizens from the devastation of fire and other natural disasters. If I could please have California Department of Forestry and San Luis Obispo County Fire Captain Tim Harness come forward. Captain Harness has worked tirelessly to improve our county's paid call fire academy and has put countless hours into improving fire service training in general. Tim worked for many years at CDF Slo County Fire Department South County Training Center and is now assigned as a captain at the Park Hill Fire Station. It is an honor for me to present this award before his peers. Thank you, Tim, for your hard work and dedication to the fire service.
Mary says get back up.
What do you guys
know this? Mary.
Can we have the chiefs join us too?
Would you?
Everybody else in CDF uniform, come here.
Another city uniform for the fires.
And anyone
in city fire?
Within the city fire, please come forward.
One big family.
Okay, look like one big family.
Sir Newman, do you want to tighten up those ranks?
We can move the flag if it's taking too much room. No flash?
No point.
Okay. Thanks again. Did Tim want to say a word, or did you care to say anything, Tim? Okay. We don't want to rush you. Okay, well, with that, at this time, we'll move to a public comment period.
Mr. David Dugan, followed by John Weisong.
My name is Dave Dugan. I'm a resident of Los Osos and a candidate for the Los Osos Community Service District. I would like to congratulate our esteemed chairperson on his appointment to the Coastal Commission. As chairperson of the Slo County Board of Supervisor, a commissioner on both LAFCO and the Coastal Commission, you have become one of the most influential public servants on the Central Coast. As a pro-growth advocate, I welcome your newly acquired position. Yet I will temper my welcome with the hope that your decision-making will be based on the assessment of the facts for long-term results and not for short-term gains. I will also wish you good luck in retaining your seat on the Slo County Board of Supervisors. Today is Election Day. I would implore all of you watching and listening who have not yet voted to make an effort to exercise one of the fundamental rights of a citizen, the right to vote. That brings me to the subject I wish to speak towards today. It appears that the June 15 LAFCO hearing may be postponed and a new date of July 6 has been recommended. I would remind all interested parties that in November, an election for three of the seats of the Los Osos CSD will take place. This regular election should be the preferred form of determining the fate of the LOCSD. If LAFCO rules to dissolve the LOCSD and the prerequisite of 90 days for a protest period is granted, due to time constraints for getting the issue on a November ballot, an election on dissolution may not take place until after November. An after-November date for an election would only impose an unnecessary cost to the residents of Los Osos and would extend the process well beyond November. A regular election for the three seats in November will still determine the will of the people, and it will allow for all options to be thoroughly explored by the affected agencies before a final decision is made. Let me remind all interested parties that the current LOCSD has a facilities report update due in August. This update will allow the public and higher authority to review the alternatives for a wastewater treatment facility, site, and system. by default, a regular November election is the most expeditious and surest way to determine the will of the people. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Weissong, followed by Julie Rodwell.
I'm John A. Weissong, Grover Beach. I'm here on some unfinished business from June 28, 2005. A lot has happened to me since then. I'm lucky to be alive. I asked for appeal from the Planning Department because of the situation on Sheridan Road that you know about, and you denied me. So I was so upset because I thought you people were outstanding and even said so at that time. And so I went to small claims. I filled out the papers. I was supposed to appear August 5th, but I didn't because the truck ran over me on July 9th. And so after these fire department people, some of them picked me up out there in the middle of the field in Guadalupe and took me to the Rio Grande Hospital, the four ambulances, four hospitals, 39 nurses, 14 doctors, put me back on my feet today here. They all said I should be in paralyzed or dead, but I'm not. I'm stubborn. I'm German, I guess. So anyway, I went to small claims, but I couldn't go because I was out of order till November. Then came up in December against ARV, Dr. Davis and Chris Knauer. And so the judge ruled in my favor at small claims. And Miss Brack was there, whom you know, to help me out. And she would have been with my sons all through that time that I was down, trying to help them out, get this thing situated, because it's lasted two years. And so then they appealed and brought me to Superior Court, Department 8, Judge Tanneman. And they didn't show, but Judge Tanneman, he heard everything I had, saw everything I had, and was really kind of upset. And he referred to a law that the people voted for. So then that wasn't good enough for them. They wouldn't pay. So I needed Wilcox over here. Outstanding. You know, I was brought up through Safeway customer service, and she has it. And she got me before the judge again in small claims, and the guy had to pay off because I told him to bring his financial stuff. The doctor had to produce. So I'm asking for my $587 that I paid you because I have three judges that ruled in my favor. Now, are you over and above the judge, or is the Planning Commission over and above on their decisions? Because I have three judges that ruled in my favor. So I'm asking for my money back. And, you know, normally I wouldn't do that, but I was at the doctor's office yesterday, and I told her, I said I had played with this game for a long time. And she said, go, do. And that's why I'm here. But, you know, you are lucky to have the fire, the ambulance, the nurses, and Dr. Hare and Dr. Kissel, who put me back and told me I should not be here. I thought about that, you know. If our politicians was half as good as our medical team here, we might not have so many problems. And I laid there for 4 months.
Sorry to interrupt you, and good to see you healthy and walking again. When we're done with public comment, I'll refer to counsel if they choose to answer to that.
I think you should think that over. Three judges.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rodwell, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning. Julie Rodwell, County Clerk Recorder. I'm just here to remind the viewers and the listeners out there that today is Election Day. The polls will be open for another almost 11 hours. There's about 30,000 absentee ballots that we've issued that have not yet been turned in. So if anybody has an absentee ballot, it's got to get back into our office or the polls by 8 o'clock tonight to be counted. Just an encouragement to get out and vote. We've got about 700 poll workers out there waiting to issue you ballots and make sure that you exercise your right to vote, or you can exercise your right, and we hope that lots and lots of people will turn out to vote today. Thank you.
Before you go, Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie, I just wanted to thank you and your staff for being open over the weekend to make it more convenient for people to vote. And I just read yesterday that they're anticipating only about a 33% turnout statewide. Right. So hopefully we'll do much better.
I'm hoping that we will, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn.
Good morning, gentlemen. Usually I have to say gentlemen and ladies. My name is Michael Wynn. I'm from Napomo, and I welcome you on this election day. I want to talk to you briefly about the the care and feeding of advisory committees. I know that you're working on those and that you're going to be coming back with some recommendations, but I have some recommendations to give you, if you will. I would urge you first to go back to the original enabling legislation from the state of California and bring your current regulations into agreement with that, both in terms of nomenclature and in terms of powers. They need to represent all segments of the community. They need to give advice about public views. And they shouldn't be sought as making policy. They should be sought as gaining voices from the community and giving those to you outright. I would advise you that the bylaws should not be considered final until they've been run by a county council. In a number of cases, there have just been some irregularities that have crept in and caused problems. I think those could be cleaned up very easily without too much staff time. I do urge you to have them operate within the Brown Act, even though by law they're not required to, at least that they should live by the spirit of the Brown Act. And they should live by the same standards of civility that your own board operates by. Last, I would advise that they that anybody that becomes a candidate for this be urged to become familiar with Title 22, the other basic documents of planning, so that when they come back to you with their votes, it won't be simply, we like this one or we don't like that one, but this does not conform with these policies and so forth. You'll get a more reasoned response. And last, I said last, but I'll say last one more time. I would urge you to perhaps make a handbook for advisory councils. Your planning department does an excellent job with their little course called Planning 101 that's given annually. But a planning book that, among other things, has sort of a standard bylaw, a format in it, and then it could be adapted on a local basis. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last request to speak on the public comment period. See nobody approaching the podium. I'll Mr. Greening, you're at C2.
Thank you. Yes, I do have a few seconds on the same topic. I am Eric Greening, and since he brought it up, I wasn't going to talk about advisory committees until you had an agenda item with the grand jury report, which I imagine you will soon. But just one thing I would like to add to his list, and I think it's an excellent list, is where there are elected representatives, and they should all be elected in some way, to make sure that when there are geographic areas represented, they are roughly equal in population. I know of one advisory committee where it is extremely unequal. An area with 2,000 people in it has roughly the same representation as areas with 100 or so. And so that's one more thing to put on the list. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none. Move on with our agenda. Next item is consent agenda, and I don't have any requests to speak. Does anyone wishes to comment on consent agenda items? Seeing none, close it to the public. Do the board members have any items, Supervisor Lentil?
No, sir.
Supervisor Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Ovid?
Move to approve. Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, second by Supervisor Lentil. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lentil?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Would you at this time introduce the first hearing item, Madam Clerk, please?
Your first hearing this morning is item C1. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by Kathy McGregor of the decision of the Planning Commission disapproving minor use permit DRC 2003-00043 for a winery building including wine processing, barrel storage, and tasting room. The project is located at 1600 Old Price Canyon Road, approximately 2.5 miles south of the city of San Luis Obispo in the 3rd District. This item was continued from March 21st, 2006, and the recommendation is to continue it to August 1st, 2006.
Could that be Mr. Warren Pedrotti?
Good morning. Brian Pedrotti, current planning staff. Yes, this is a request. There's a recommendation to continue the item from today's hearing to August 1st, 2006, to allow the submittal and review of additional information and completion of the environmental determination. The additional information includes a botanical survey to determine the presence of sensitive plant species on the site. And that is all I have.
Any questions to staff? Okay. Do you have anything else to add, Ms. Griffin? Okay. This is an appeal, so we'll go to Kathy McGregor first. Is she here? Or anybody representing her?
Mr. Chair, Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. I don't believe the applicant's represented today because they agree with the continuance.
Continue? Item? Okay. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. District 3 to continue this item?
Yes. First move staff's approval.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Lentol, seconded by Supervisor Ovid. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Ayes have it. Madam Clerk, can we go to C7 since we were to do that first?
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, item C7, this was the item for the Sheriff Coroner request that the Board of Supervisors hold a public hearing on the use of the Justice Assistance Grant funding and amend the operational budget to include additional equipment for the regional firearm simulator, trailer, and other sheriff department supplies and appropriation transfer. And this is requested that this item be continued to July 25th.
Okay.
Chairman, I can handle this.
Mr. Edge?
The notice that you adopted is fairly self-explanatory. The Sheriff's Department had been preparing for this grant hearing. It requires a public hearing. They duly noticed the public hearing for today, and actually getting the paperwork on the agenda as a noticed hearing fell through the cracks somehow. And so we did the catch yesterday, added it today, and fortunately it's not time critical, so what we're proposing, rather than try and have the hearing today and bring you the new information, that your board agree to continue this item to July 25th, 2006, and then we will have the regular public hearing requirement.
Okay, does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Now I'm bringing it back to the board for a motion to continue.
Approve staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
Moved by Supervisor Lentol, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, it's unanimous. We'll move to item C2.
Okay, item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal by the Berry Family Trust of the Subdivision Review Board denial for their request for a tentative parcel map CO 050016 to subdivide an existing 5.1-acre parcel into three parcels of approximately 1.7 acres each and designate the project site as a TDC receiver site in the 5th District. This item was continued from May 9, 2006. Recommendation for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. B.B. Ms. Cavanaugh.
Good morning, members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm back today with a list of conditions.
Your name for the record.
Elizabeth Cavanaugh, County Planning Staff. I'm back today with a list of findings and a list of conditions per your instruction to approve the Berry TDC parcel map. Just a quick reminder of the parcel map. It's a... Thanks. It's a 5-acre parcel map that will be subdivided into three 1.7-acre lots. And staff is recommending that you adopt the CEQA documents and mitigate negative declaration and approve tentative parcel map CO50016 based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B, along with some changes to conditions 2 through 6 that we handed out a memo just now that reflects some changes that the County Public Works Department wanted to make in the list of conditions. And I'm available for any questions.
Any questions from board members? Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cavanaugh, we just got this list of revisions, and I'm just curious. I was comparing them with what's in our staff report. Can you point out any significant differences in what we have and then what you just handed us?
I would prefer Mr. Marshall to address that because those are his changes.
Can I have a copy of what they're looking at?
Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, members of the board. Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I apologize for the late transmittal of this information. It's the timing of my communication with planning staff resulted in this being the way to communicate this information to you. Let's see. Now I have to remind myself why I said what I said. The basic concept, Elizabeth, could you put the map back on the screen? Previously, the recommendation that had been before you was that the parcel map would construct its piece of Pasadena Road, which in this case is the left-hand side of the screen, and then construct an extension from there southerly to an existing location where Pasadena Road already exists. But the problem we unearthed last hearing was that there's a gap where there isn't any right-of-way for this applicant to work within. So an item that was discussed as a function of your last hearing was constructing a road within this parcel that will connect between San Antonio and Pasadena. And so these conditions give the specifications for the construction of that connecting road. So there will be a little piece of Pasadena fronting this property, and that's what number three does. And then number four is really where the most change is. And because it's a boundary street, we're recommending that it be a two-thirds improvement with a minimum width of 18 feet and a 40-foot dedicated right-of-way. And then condition number five, some of the language that was in your staff report in condition number five is sufficiently addressed in the language of 2, 3, and 4 above, so I recommended to clean it up that we take some of that out.
Any questions for Mr. Marshall?
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions for any staff folks? Seeing none, would the appellant care to speak at this time?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Pamela Giardini with Planning Solutions, and we have received the new conditions. I just have a couple questions for Richard myself because I just got them late yesterday afternoon, too.
Why don't you ask us the question? I want to ask Mr. Marshall.
Okay. I have a question on item number three where it says minimum right-of-way width to be 40 feet. On Mr. Dernbaugh's parcel map, which is, I think, two parcels down, we had to construct the two-thirds A1 road, and it was within a 25-foot offer of dedication instead of a 40-foot. And so that was just one question. Was that a typographical error, or is that what he really wants? Because we can fit it in a 25-foot, and that's what went on down the street. The other comment I had or question I had was, when we talked to you 2 weeks ago, we talked about possibly having the road that's being constructed on the northerly property side be in conjunction with the neighbor next door. And so the 40-foot right-of-way, dedicated right-of-way in parcel number four is fine, too. But if we're going to share that with the neighbor, if we don't need all 40-foot, can we just put in a little sentence there, or as to be determined by Public Works Director at a later date to be acceptable in case we only need 25 again? I mean, it's not going to matter, but it then frees up that offer of dedication so you don't end up with these really wide pieces that you may not need. But that's Richard's call. Other than that, we're in agreement with staff. Oh, I did have one other question. On item number 13 under drainage, the drainage swales to be contained in drainage easements dedicated on the map, there's not any kind of set size, so I'm assuming that's up to us to determine, and then that would be proofed out by County Public Works, and just wanted to verify that. Other than that, we're fine with the conditions as is.
We'll have Mr. Marshall answer that question, then I'll go to the public, and I'll come back to you for your closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Marshall.
Thank you. Richard Marshall, Public Works. I'll take the last one first. The drainage, I agree with what Ms. Giardini has requested. that will have them propose a drainage easement that's acceptable to Public Works staff as part of the drainage calculations that are prepared. In terms of the width of the right-of-way for both Pasadena and the connecting street, the concept that's evolving as a function of these discussions is that each of them will function as a public road. And, in fact, that was a key part of your consideration at the last hearing, was that this new connecting roadway will be public. And the state law requires that the minimum right-of-way width for public roads be 40 feet in order to be accepted for maintenance. What we've been proceeding along with an assumption as we develop Pasadena in an incremental fashion is that we would get 25 feet from each side of the common property line through the middle of the block, and 50 feet is our county standard, where 40 feet is the absolute minimum we can go with the state law minimum. So we've been getting 25-foot offers along this common line with the assumption someday we'll string it all together and come up with something that works. But when a piece of road is going to go in and be a public road from the day it's built, it needs to be within the minimum 40, and that's what we're recommending to you today. If they get part of that 40 from another property, that still satisfies the condition, and that would be fine with us. Okay. The part of the 40 could be across the line, and it still totals 40, and that's okay.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had a question for Ms. Giardini. Thank you, Mr. Marshall.
Why don't we come back?
You want to wait?
Yeah. Go to the public at this time, if that's okay with you. I have only one request to speak. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I know you had a full deliberation on this before. It's, as Mr. Marshall said, this right-of-way is to function as a public road, and it makes me wonder if we're still actually talking about a five-acre parcel once this is dedicated. I'm not saying it's necessarily fair to an applicant to first impose an unexpected condition on him and then say, well, now we have a problem because of the condition we just imposed. But it kind of worries me from the standpoint of precedent. If you have a five-acre parcel, you can split it in two now without a TDC because of the planning area standard. If you have a less than five-acre parcel, you can't. And to split it twice, in other words, to split it in three, goes beyond what the TDC program is supposed to be doing in South Atascadero. So I just hope you will somehow clear up the precedent on this, because if you're going to start routinely extracting right-of-way and leaving remainder parcels that are less than 5 acres, then I don't think that's what was intended all along. Of course, I also continue to be concerned about cumulative impacts. And I, TDC after TDC, I always look at the check marks in the negative declaration and supposedly significant and will be mitigated. I didn't even see a significant will be mitigated under traffic and or transportation and circulation. And yet, again, this will maybe just a small increment, but it will add to the stresses on, for example, the Santa Barbara Road interchange. And as the people of Atascadero are learning on an interchange a little bit farther up the line, you'll be talking about it at SLOCOG tomorrow, the cost of doing these interchange projects is doubling every 4 years. The most optimistic timeline is about 15 years from the beginning of a it slipped my mind what you call this thing, the first study that you do to get one of these things in the queue. From the beginning of that to project delivery, the most optimistic timetable, barring an earthquake or a recession, is 15 years, and that step has not yet begun with this interchange. So, again, I have a cumulative concern with all of these cumulative TDCs, each of which lowers the parcel size in the neighborhood, leading lower parcel sizes nearby to conform with it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I continue to be concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Any other person would like to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close to the general public at this time, and please come forward as Ms. Giardini.
Thank you. Pamela Giardini again with Planning Solutions. And as stated before, unfortunately, Richard and I were not able to talk this morning. We were both too busy, and so he explained everything to me, and that makes perfect sense. So we're fine with it. And I knew it would work, and it was just making sure we weren't giving too much right away, but now I understand. And for addressing Mr. Greening's concerns, when we do look at these parcels, we run our gross net calculations, and we're in compliance with this road offer of dedication to meet those, so we're fine with that, too. And so on that note, we just ask that you continue with your approval of this project, and thank you for listening to us.
Before you leave, Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Giardini, originally when we discussed this project, you described a shared driveway that would become the road connecting Pasadena with San Antonio. You were going to share that with the parcel.
Ms. Kellogg next door.
Right. Is that still planned?
We're still talking to her. She has a personal situation going on that's requiring a lot of her personal time, so she's a little harder to get hold of, but that's our intent. We're going to have to take the road up and then eventually move it all onto our parcel because she's just into two, but it will be as shared as much as we can share it.
Okay, and where it's not shared, you'll put the entire...
Right, then it's entirely going on our parcel.
Okay, and then one other condition I want to point out, 16, where you'll actually submit a map showing the location of the building envelopes as well as the ability to place the septic outside of the drainage swales?
Yes, I have actually a copy of what we submitted here. I don't think the board's really that interested in it, but it was done, this is your parcel 2 and parcel 3 here. It was submitted to Environmental Health last week. Lori Salo was on vacation, so I submitted a copy to Richard Lichtenfels, and also Elizabeth Cavanaugh received a copy, too. And just for your general knowledge here, here's the swales here, the swale here, 100-foot setback here, 100-foot setback here, building envelope and septic systems located outside the critical areas. So it did meet the criteria that was set on it. It was turned into Environmental Health already for their review, and so the condition can stay because it doesn't make a difference, but we can meet that condition.
You were able to do that?
Yes, we were.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Supervisor Patterson, the motion?
Yes, I move that we approve the project and staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. A roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Now, this next item is going to be, I'm not going to say much about it because I'll complicate it a little more than it needs to be, because we're going to vote twice. Not because we're board members and can't do that, but that's the way the process will work.
Your next item for hearing is item C3. This is a hearing and assessment election held by the board, the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, regarding the proposed additional assessment for flood zone 1 and 1A. Recommendation is to hold the public hearing and the election on election day.
Okay, Mr. Solomon, we'll have you lead us through this process, even though I have given two different directions to follow. And I'm going to try to do my best not to confuse anyone.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Let's see if we have a second to get set up here.
Mike's not on.
Now? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Mark Sullivan. I'm with the Public Works Department. And what I'd like to do first is give just a little bit of background and orientation as to how we got to where we are today and maybe where we're going. And as soon as we get the first slide up here. Okay, one quick second. What what we're working with is the area in Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and the Arroyo Grande Channel and the Los Barrios Channel. And the slide before you now is kind of giving an orientation showing the two water areas. And that's the Los Barrios Creek, and that's the Arroyo Grande. In March of 2001, there was a levee failure. And in April 2003, as a means to provide ongoing funding, the board relinquished district to the State Department of Water Resources. In June in 2005, due to the cost issues, a community coalition filed a petition with the board requesting a postponement of the relinquishment. The board approved a one-year postponement until July 1st of 2006. And the coalition used this postponement period to develop a local solution. In January of 2006, a study was concluded which evaluated various alternatives to improving or operating the flood structures. In February 2006, an alternative estimated to cost $350,000 per year with an annual 3% inflation adjustment was determined to be the best option at this time to enhance maintenance efforts. In March 2006, an assessment report conducted by a local engineering firm determined the special benefit per parcel and assigned assessments to each parcel receiving benefit based on an assessment formula taking property usage and area into consideration. However, before an assessment can be levied, it must be approved by a 2018 election. And in order to be approved, the ballots returned in support of the additional assessment must exceed by a simple majority the ballots opposed, and the ballots are weighted according to the proportional financial obligation of the affected properties. That's where we are today. We're going to be holding this election and a public hearing. On June 8th, the clerk will tabulate the ballots after today's action at 9 a.m. or as soon as possible thereafter in an area open to the public. On June 27th, depending on the election results, if an additional assessment is approved, the department recommends to rescind the transfer to DWR, and if it's not approved, then the department will recommend to continue the transfer to DWR. So far, we've sent out about 1,300-plus ballots on April 7th, and many have already been returned. Today's hearing provides a formal opportunity for interested parties to express their opinions, either in favor or against the proposed assessment. Today will also be the last day for property owners to submit, change, or withdraw their ballots. A unique provision of Prop 218 is that it provides that government-owned properties receiving special benefits be treated the same as all other properties. So, just like all the other property owners, the board will have to decide during the public testimony process on how to vote on its properties prior to the close of the testimony. In a nutshell, what we're trying to accomplish today is take public testimony on the proposed additional assessments, determine how to vote on the flood control properties, and determine how to vote on the county properties.
Okay, this time the board is the flood control district. We're changing heads. And I will go to the public and ask for comments regarding flood zone 11A and the additional assessment and determine what on flood zone district property ballots. And that's the first part of our process.
That's correct.
And I know that there are some people out there feeling the same way I do as what are we really doing. But hopefully by the end we'll all have a clear understanding. And when I open to the public and when the last person speaks, I will not close it to the public because later on you'll come back for, if you wish to do so, speak on the following item, which will be the Zone 11A, the Flood Control District. In the beginning is the Flood Zone District Property Ballot. So we'll open it to the public at this time. Mr. Getty, did you want to speak on the first item in this process or the second one, which is more so what you work so hard to accomplish, or both? You're welcome to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Norm Getty, an Oceano resident. Seems like very familiar faces and very familiar process. Briefly to say, we are here with you today to encourage you in the the forward progress. Any number of folks have encouraged me to stand and speak to say we appreciate the work you've done with us. This is another evidence that we can work together, and it's a huge signal of the progress that's being made. So with that, briefly, thank you. We look forward to your positive vote in this matter.
Thank you, and appreciate all your efforts. Ms. Stephanie Wald?
Good morning. Stephanie Wald, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. I urge you to vote yes on the assessment approval. Voting yes means keeping local control of flood protection, water quality, and habitat enhancement programs for Arroyo Grande Creek. Voting yes means Marjorie Gilliam and her neighbors will not have to pay the huge assessment that DWR would impose, but a much lower rate of increase. Voting yes means that local agriculturalists will stay in the loop of planning and implementation of projects that protect their properties and livelihoods. And voting yes means that the growing partnership among Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, the Resource Conservation District, the City of Arroyo Grande, the County of San Luis, residents and businesses will continue to work very hard to achieve a cost-effective and efficient work plan to achieve adequate flood protection and overall protection for the Arroyo Grande Creek watershed. Please vote yes.
Thank you, and that was the last request to speak. At this time, we as the directors for the Flood Control and Water Conservation District will take a vote and direct Mr. Glenn Prady to fill in that oval spot and sign your name in the dotted lines. Am I correct, Madam Clerk?
Your direction is to give them a direction as to whether to vote yes or no and to
yes.
Have them sign the ballot.
And at this time, I will entertain a motion to vote yes unanimously on this item.
So moved.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. Do we go with the voice? Or?
Voice is fine.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. It's unanimous. Mr. Prady, you know what to do.
Right away.
And
get a pen, bud.
You need it. Now, that pen will become worth something. We're going to change hats now and become a Board of Supervisors again. And
Mr. Chairman, as the Board of Supervisors, we have six parcels. We have six parcels that are owned by the County of San Luis Obispo. And you can see in the yellow area there, it's the airport and the campground and a couple of lagoons. The campground has a assessment value of $4,471.01, and the airport has a assessment value of $26,007.22 for a total of $30,478.23 out of the $350,000. And then we would ask that you direct the Director of General Services or their representative on how to vote and to turn in signed ballots before the end of public testimony.
Thank you. Again, we'll go to the public. Would any one of the previous speakers care to speak at this time? No. Does anyone else from the public wish to comment on this item? Mr. Greening.
Thank you. And I am Eric Greening, and I do urge a yes vote on behalf of local control. I do wish that the habitat conservation plan extended all the way through this area to the sea, but at least having the resource conservation, the county, the flood control district, and so on, all on the same page is a very positive development. I do have one question. I noticed that on this Thursday's Planning Commission agenda, there's a general plan conformity report for a property transfer from County General Services to the South County Sanitation District, and probably the area that most needs protection and where we least want any flooding, namely the sludge drying beds and in the vicinity of the sewer plant there. If and when the property is transferred, who is liable for the assessment and who is the proper party to vote for the assessment on this parcel? Has the transfer taken place, and has everything happened that needs to happen and all the X's and T's crossed and I's dotted? I guess that's my question, because that seems to be happening at the same time, and I just want to be sure that nothing happens that could cause a technicality that anything trips over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I don't see anyone else approaching. At this time, I will close the public comment period officially. Come back to Mr. Sullivan if there's an answer for Mr. Green's concern.
The assessment election is based on the final tax rolls that were previously established. And so it would be the previous owner that was on the tax roll as of May. So there shouldn't be any issue related to changing the voter at this point in time.
Okay, thank you. With that, I will request that we have a unanimous support. Is there a motion?
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitz, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. All those in favor?
I'm sorry, that motion is directing the General Services Director to vote yes on those ballots.
And we have Mr. Lai with us that will direct him as soon as the motion has either passed or failed. With that, voice call, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Mr. Leib, you'll fill in that oval spot and sign your signature, and we want to frame that pencil. With that, congratulations, and thank you folks who are here from representing RCD, Salmon Enhancement, and folks from the Mobile Home Park, Mr. Norm and Mrs. Guyden. Thank you all for being in, and the chairman of the Zone 11A, Mr. Kobara. Thank you all for your efforts, and look forward to be working with you as soon as the rest of the votes are in come June 27. Okay?
No, you still have a little bit more to do here.
Okay.
Page 3.
You need to go back sitting as the flood control.
Now we go sit as the board of directors for the flood control and water conservation district. Switch has. Is there any additional public input testimony at this time? Seeing none, we'll close the floor to any further testimony. Back for board of discussion.
No move. No discussion.
Okay. Any discussion?
You're moving the staff recommendation, which is basically to close the public hearing, direct that the ballots be counted, and to return, that the clerk will be opening the ballots on the
page. Let me continue, and we'll hold the motion by Mr. Lenhall. As I close the public hearing and take action on the recommendation number 3 in the staff report, your motion, Mr. Lenhall?
Move staff recommendation.
Moved by Supervisor Lentol and seconded by Supervisor Ovid. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Now we are stepping down again as the Board of Directors for the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and is now sitting as the Board of Supervisors. Thank you. We don't do this every Tuesday, so. Again, thank you all for being here. Appreciate your efforts. We can either go on a short break or continue and finish the last
break.
Short break, okay. It's 9:53. We'll be back at 10:10. At this time, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce the next item on our agenda?
The next item on today's agenda is item C4. This is a hearing to consider a resolution of necessity to allow the county to acquire necessary real property through eminent domain proceedings for the purpose of extending runway 11-29 and approach protection at the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. This is in the 3rd District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Okay.
Thank you, Vicki. Good morning, Chairman Asajian and members of the board. I am your county real property manager, Karen Madalena.
The hearing being conducted today will address all of the relevant issues that your board will need to consider before approving a resolution of necessity allowing the power of eminent domain to be exercised in the acquisition of property for improvements of the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport, including the extension of runway 1129 and related approach protection. Your board must approve the resolution of necessity by a two-thirds vote of the full board. There are multiple requirements imposed by law that must be met before a public entity may adopt a resolution of necessity and thus commence eminent domain proceedings. Those issues have been identified in the staff report. They include that the acquisition is in the public interest, required by the proposed project, and that the project is planned in a manner that will be most compatible with the greatest public good and the least private injury. Airports Manager Klaasje Nairn, assisted by Assistant Airports Manager Martin Pell, will present additional details supporting this proposed acquisition and compliance of all the applicable statutory procedures. The subject property of today's hearing is the fee simple acquisition of an approximate 13.1-acre parcel of land owned by James P. and Carolyn J. Philbin. This parcel has been identified as necessary for airport improvements as defined in the airport master plan adopted by your board and the environmental impact report certified by your board. Both of these documents have been previously provided to your board and form the basis for our request today. The purchase of this property is supported by grant funding from the Federal Aviation Administration as it conforms with all applicable requirements for public use and is considered an integral part of the overall plan for immediate and future public use. Full acquisition of this parcel is necessary for the realignment of Santa Fe Road, approach protection, drainage mitigation, and future traffic circulation as a result of the airport improvement project. Also with us today is Special Counsel Andrew Rausch from Daly & Heft, available to address any technical questions relative to the eminent domain proceedings. We have received a letter opposing this acquisition from counsel for the property owner. A copy of the letter has been provided to you. Time has been reserved during this hearing for the property owner and or his representative to address the board. At the conclusion of this hearing, staff asks that your board move to adopt the resolution of necessity by a two-thirds vote of the full board and thus allow the acquisition of the subject property through the eminent domain proceedings. And with that, I would like to turn the hearing over to Klaasje Nairn for input.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Thank you, Karen. My name is Klaasje Nairn. I'm the County Airports Manager, and I'm here today to discuss the acquisition of the Philbin parcel. It's APN 763-71012. Martin's going to help me flow through this and hopefully get to the meat of the issue here. We're here today to discuss the resolution of necessity and approval of a land purchase for runway extension purposes, alignment of Santa Fe Road, approach protection, and related drainage improvements. In order to understand the totality of the airport improvement program, I'd like to review the elements specifically pertaining to the land acquisition known as the Philbin parcel. In the past number of years, we've been acquiring property around the airport for approach protection, runway protection purposes, and I'd like to review those quickly for you. In 1995, and this is our airport property map, by the way, comes directly out of the airport master plan that you approved and certified on May 23rd. In 1995, we purchased the Heinemann parcel, which is in the RPC approach protection of runway 725. We also purchased the Brugelli parcel that was in 1991, again for approach protection purposes. The Zanoli parcels were purchased back in 1976. That was to protect runway 1129. Barnhill Ivy was purchased in 1990. Those are actually two parcels. And then we did a property exchange with Say's Pure Gas in 1995. So you can see we've been actively purchasing property in this area as the money became available from the FAA. Again, to understand the totality of the improvements that are happening at the airport, I'd like to review. There was a contract recently awarded for the midfield taxiway improvements and the relocation of the threshold of runway 725. That's the engineering drawing, and that's the contract that was actually awarded recently. We are relocating the threshold of runway 725 in order to increase the capacity of runway 1129 and help circulation in the midfield. But what that does is it shortens the runway from 3,260 feet to 2,500 feet. So it's our intent in the long term to extend runway 725 to a total of 3,000 feet. That's a length that was recommended by the FAA. The acquisition of the Philbin parcel, coincidentally, will also provide approach protection for this runway as well, for runway 725, as well as for runway 1129. And I'm going to quote directly from the FAA acquisition policies as they relate to approach protection, and Martin will point that out. In regard to runway 725, approach protection surfaces for a non-precision instrument approach runway, areas of land up to 750 feet laterally from the runway center line and extending 34 feet beyond each end of the primary surface are eligible for acquisition and are encouraged by the FAA. In regard to runway 1129, you can see that that approach, this is our, by the way, our precision approach runway served by turbojet and regional jet aircraft. And the precision approach areas of land up to 1,250 feet laterally from runway center line and extending 5,000 feet beyond each end of the primary surface are also encouraged for improvement. And as you can see there, the Philbin parcel is part of that acquisition process. In the near term, the necessity for the Philbin parcel is for the relocation of Santa Fe Road for the ultimate extension of runway 1129. You want to go back one slide, Martin? The engineering drawing. This is the project that is actually going out to bid, hopefully on June 27th. This shows the final relocation of Santa Fe Road. This was the alignment that was certified in the document and examined in the environmental impact report that your board certified on May 23rd. Again, I spoke to approach and transitional surfaces. You can get back to the concept design. There we go. And then also the drainage improvements that are going to be required when we do the realignment of the road. We need to stay away from the creek and also ensure that other properties are not impacted by our project and that we provide a drainage swale for drainage improvements in that area. Again, as I mentioned, the runway extension, the latest graphic design, this was examined in the final environmental impact report and was adjusted from the master plan concept to accommodate the most environmentally compatible alternative to development. Also, in phase two of the master plan, if we can get back to the concept design, I know I'm flashing around here, interior road improvements. Those are all the interior roadways that we'll have to create in order for businesses to have access to their properties. And ultimately, we would have a hangar development in that area. And as you can see, that overlays the Philbin parcel as well. This project is totally for public airport use. No private use is contemplated in this project. To do so would be in non-compliance of our grant assurances, and we certainly would not want to jeopardize those because that would require the county to repay all of the grants that we have accepted thus far, which are multiple millions. The board certified the environmental document that included this property acquisition on May 23rd. That concludes my presentation, and if you have any questions, I will be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from supervisors? Seeing none, we'll go to the public. Mr. Philbin, would you like to address the board at this time, please?
Yes. Thank you.
And let me, I said we give you 5 minutes. Usually the public comment is about 3 minutes. We'll give you additional two since you're the property owner.
Well, I see you have a court stenographer here for building a record. I've also brought my tape recorder.
Please.
And I was glad to hear that on the record, my attorney, Herman Fitzgerald, has submitted a letter to you, which you received, objecting to a number of points. And I want to enter my objections right off the bat this morning for this rushed situation. We were never noticed of the EIR. I have consistently been trying to get information out of the airport staff as to what's going on, the road realignments, what do they need, what don't they need, and why. And I've learned more this morning from Kirsch's presentation and the video, or the pictures. Do you gentlemen have the opportunity to see what's on the screen?
It's in front of us, sir.
It's in front of you. All right, fine. Didn't understand all this modern technology and how fine things are today. So, to further record this morning, I want to clarify the ownership of the land. The land is owned by our family limited partnership, the James Patrick and Carolyn June Philbin Family Limited Partnership, certificate filed January 13, 1906. The personal property on the property is owned by the same party's personal property limited partnership. There has never been an entity known as Jim Philbin Aggregates. What was in the phone book was Jim Philbin, comma, Aggregates years ago. All of the paperwork and situations that has come out in recent times has removed the comma, and so therefore changes the name. I don't know what the problem is. You know, it's very simple. Pick up a phone and talk to me. I do respond. I have had consistent difficulties in getting response from your staff. And we've discussed this when your land negotiator presented the first offer from the county. Rita Neal was there. Karen Madalena was there. My counsel at that time, myself, and David Richmond. Very fine gentleman, pleasure to work with. Learn more from David in a few minutes than I can learn from all of the rest. I don't understand the animosity. I don't understand the treatment I have received. It's the real world. For instance, within the last 2 weeks, there was a surveyor out again, and with Mr. Dan Stafford, still can't get his name straight.
His name's Don Sather.
Pardon?
Sather.
Yes. Excuse me for Don. They were walking up and down the driveway, and so I seen them, and I went off to ask them, hi, guys, what's going on? Well, they were trying to determine where the drainage went to, coming off of the airport, onto CBI property, onto me. Some of it's piped underground. And the surveyor said, well, I think it from CBI's retention pond, it goes off here somewhere northwest. I said, would we just really like to know? I know where it is. Put it in. So I showed him the manhole where it comes from CBI onto me, where it leaves the manhole and proceeds southwesterly to the natural drainage course. 2 minutes, and the big mystery was solved, and I don't know how many hundreds of dollars it took to have them out there wandering around. This has been consistent, gentlemen and lady. I don't understand it. But let's back up a little bit. I understand I have 5 minutes. My wife and I acquired this property in December of 1978. as an investment for our long-term retirement plan, and for 5 minutes to discuss a lifetime investment, I object. I would ask for more time.
Mr. Philbin, I'll be happy to grant you more time. Give me an idea how long would it take you to tell us.
I haven't practiced this presentation, Cutchill. I would think it's going to take at least 10, 15, maybe even 20 minutes.
Why don't we give you the time you need to? Well, 15 minutes will be satisfactory.
Would appreciate it.
Okay, sir. Why don't we give you additional 15 minutes, which will be a total of 20 minutes usually. Appellants in this nature, we have given anywhere up to 10 minutes, but it's being a sensitive issue. We're going to go beyond that and allow you another 15 minutes on the top of the 5 minutes we gave you. As you said, that will be satisfactory for you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sure.
I would respectfully ask that this process be continued for 2 weeks so my counsel can get actively involved and we cover the pertinent points, because I believe from the information that I've been able to understand on the presentation of your staff and my conversations with FAA, there is no necessity, as in your paperwork, to acquire all of the 13 acres. On your maps, which I brought copies of today to show, and don't know if we can illustrate it well enough on the small size of the prints. I stopped at the airport manager's office to ask for a bigger map, ask for some help. I did get copies of what was in the accepted airport layout plan. Almost unreadable. And for my property to be in the clear zone, my property to be in the clear zone for either runway 1129 or 725 appears that I'm in the rising vertical height limitation clear zone areas. Nothing on the ground is affected from my interpretation. Now, my wife and I both learned to fly on the San Luis Obispo Airport. I got my pilot's license in 1968. I spent 12 years helping that airport as a member of the Airport Land Use Commission. I was the chairman for the latter years, for a number of years. We are aviation supporters. We're airport supporters. Do anything we can to help. And all of this fooling around is going to spend a lot of money, unnecessarily, in my opinion. I'll have a written counteroffer to Mr. Richmond this afternoon with several proposals, one of which, if you want all the 13 acres, all I ask is a fair market price, which the courts will decide if we go that way. My wife and I are considering giving you free the roadway right-of-way you think you need. Leave the land alone. The first map that was available to me showed them taking about 5 acres of the northerly part of the property, and I don't know if we can get it up on the screen or not.
Let's give it a try while you're talking to us to bring the map, and do we have a pointer that Mr. Philippian can use?
This was the first preliminary layout to use the 13 acres, realign the road, etc. It showed them using the northerly 5 acres of the 13 for a road traversing east to west from Santa Fe.
Mr. Philbin, any chance we can have you use the other mic and point what you're talking about? And
we get it up on the screen. The you folks got some very nice situations here, and I couldn't learn of that. I asked before the meeting as what can be happening here to get my things on the...
Would you please use the mic, Mr. Philbin? And Mr. Philbin, everything that you will look at today will come the property of the clerks.
Pardon?
Everything that you're introducing here will become the property of the clerk. So that map will end up with the clerk's office.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have a mic for you. If you want to use that, and if you need to point anything on your map, feel free to do so.
Look like you're working on getting it activated.
Okay. And what we'll pose, and we pose the time so we're not taking minutes away from you.
Going back to your gracious comment on allowing some time, I would respectfully ask for a continuance so we can do this properly. We have been rushed. We have not been privy to the EIR, subject to my learning that had been passed and going over and demanding a copy. We have asked for the environmental investigation report that was done on the property by Padre Associates, which I was promised to have a copy of since I volunteered to let them come on the property and do the investigation. I have yet to receive a copy. What I received was a planning department analysis of that. That's not the report. So let the record show I have been denied the pertinent information which I was promised, which I agreed to, and allow your people to come in and do their preliminary investigations if they even wanted the 13 acres. I have been put upon, and I resent it. We have also been denied at this time the discussion in regards to appraisals. I allowed two different appraisals on the property, accompanied both of them to point out the benefits of the property. So I want that on the record. I am again going back to the history of our involvement with the airport. We've spent not only 12 years on the Airport Land Use Commission, we were basically instrumental in helping getting a fire department established on the airport for the airport protection and the surrounding property owners. We helped gather in the volunteers necessary to staff that airport along with the county fire department, CDF, providing an engineer. For my good work, my fellow volunteers made me chief for 2 years. That was the blind leading the blind. None of us knew what we were doing, but I agreed to take that fiddler appointment, provided that we share it and pass it on. I spent 8 years with the Edna Valley Volunteers. Very educational, very rewarding experience. And greatly appreciated to have a fire department on that side of town for the protection of not only the airport, because all we had before was one dry chemical extinguisher, usually locked up in the maintenance hangar. And there was at least 3 planes burnt on that airport before we had a fire department. So I've been around. I think I've helped. I've got an interesting hearsay reputation that I keep running into. Nice newspaper article most recently where some county official said I served time for fraud. That's a mighty serious accusation. I went to see the editor of the Telegram Tribune, or the Tribune. The newspaper reporter wouldn't come to the meeting. They printed a retraction the next day because they got a hold of the federal attorneys in Los Angeles and said, Mr. Philbin is right. He did not serve time for fraud. That's a felony. That's serious. I served time for a little misdemeanor. 74 days in Lompoc Motel. Very interesting education. Somebody's going to ask, well, what's the charge? Title 26, 7203. willful failure to file and pay income taxes, which learned Judge Rehnquist of the United States Supreme Court has issued in his opinions and was presented to that court three different times, that if a statute does not have implementing rules and regulations, there has been no violation of any civil or criminal accusation. Nevertheless, the process went forward. But it wasn't a fraud, and one of your county officials, and we know which one it was, he also got on TV, has defamed me. And there's been all kinds of other allegations out in the news media, which I don't think is right and proper nor reflective of you fine people. Continuing on, the necessity of taking this 13 acres, as we were trying to show on that map and which doesn't show, is that the extended center line of runway 725, the extended runway of 1129, they have a good shot. Miss, it's not going to show up the way you're doing it there. If I could have Martin, could you pull up the master plan? Layout plan? Yeah. You also had a shot of the runway extension center lines, safety zones, that sort of thing. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. My apologies, gentlemen. But the fine understanding I had from asking staff how could we show these sort of things. Did not produce what I wanted to share with you. Out of the final technical report, the maps that come out of that show very clearly that this clear zone does not cover the 13 acres from either runway. Surface clear zone. The area could be impacted with the rising height clearance, as all of the area around the airport, both approach and departure, is under. You have height limitations. That's why this property, when we bought it, was classified light industrial, M1, with a D for design review, and AH for airport hazard. My wife and I willingly granted the county navigation easements affecting the land so that not violating the heights. Now then, here is what I'm told, and I do believe it coincides with the latest map for the road realignment. I think Martin has got a shot of that too, which would probably show up better. I don't know if you can ascertain which of the 13 acres. But there you go. It shows the upper northwest corner of the road coming on to the 13 acres, going diagonally from the south to the north, which is understandable. The excuse I've heard is that the environmentalists want you 100 feet away from the creek, I would offer for your consideration that that creek is not the natural creek. Where the water flows now is in a borrowed ditch that Union Oil created after the big fire in the 20s. The creek is on the other side of the levee. If the creek would go back to its original non-man-made change, it would almost be out of your way for your departure end. But where a group of people can come up with an environmental demand on us citizens who aren't elected, who have no one to answer for or no way to get to them other than suing them, it's beyond me. And here they've caused all kinds of grief and turmoil. But we can live with you going through a road right away on that northwest corner, then to the southerly boundary of that parcel where the county wants to run Santa Fe Road from the east to the west in a direct line onto our 13 acres, I offer a thought. As Santa Fe Road starts to make the turn at the entrance to Geoscience, Chicago Bridge and Iron, and the Philbin property, there is possibilities of making a slight bend, maintaining that slight bend, and then bringing it back along the existing line of power poles, which is approximately the fence boundary between county property and Philbin property. And that would put, roughly guessing, 60-70% of the new Santa Fe Road realignment on land you already own. You wouldn't have to bother.
Mr. Philbin, will you please conclude?
I'll try. You want me to close out? All right.
We're there, but
for the record,
For the record,
I say there's alternatives that would cost less money, could be done immediately. I understand from hearsay that you're in a big rush to get to moving dirt, hopefully by July 1st, maybe in August. I'm assured by my attorney that if you go through this process that you're looking at, the eminent domain, the offer, or not the order in possession that you would ask for so you could come in and start using the property, it takes 90 days to actually get possession before you can do it. Now look, I'm here to help. I'm not here to hinder. If we can, I want to keep our property and our retirement program going. The first offer from the county is ridiculous. It's not based on the real world or the real facts. You'd be getting a counter. But I'd also offer you, we can give you the bloody right-of-ways for a couple of minor concessions. The big one, which seemed to be hard to swallow, is Philbin staying in the neighborhood.
Thank you, sir. Would anyone from the public would like to comment on this item in front of us? Because I don't have any request to speak. With that, I'll close it to the public. Bring it back to staff. Could there be a comment made on a couple of concerns? The EIR, if that was communicated with the landlord, and also if the landlord had produced any appraised value for his property.
We haven't received anything from the landowner on the appraisal of a counteroffer that we have submitted. In regard to the environmental document, all those documents were on file. They were available for public comment beginning on February 27th, I believe it was. It was open for 45 days. It was available in our office to review. Most of the drawings that actually Mr. Philbin has produced here, we provided to him. So we made available as much information as he requested and as we were advised to provide by our attorney. So I don't believe we've withheld any information at all. In fact, we've been very open in our production of that information. So as far as any other technical aspects, I'll give those to Andrew to respond to.
Okay.
Just want to make sure I understand the board's question. Is the question whether or not we've received any appraisals from Mr. Philbin?
That was one question.
Yes, we have not received any appraisal information from him. And as to whether or not we've given any information to him, in the board's packet there should be a copy of the offer letter that we provided to Mr. Philbin with a copy of the appraiser's summary of his appraisal analysis. The comparable sales are listed, and that's included in the board's packet.
Until now, have we, prior to this date, have we received any communications about the offers that Mr. Philbin introduced this morning as far as taking his time to bring his appraisal value to us, his appraised value for his property to us?
Well, first I have to mention that in this hearing, one of the tasks of the board is not to determine whether or not we're giving enough money to Mr. Philbin. The issue of the amount of just compensation is something that would be determined by a jury. If the board approves a resolution of necessity, appraisals then would be presented in an eminent domain proceeding, and what value the property owner gets for his property is a matter that the jury determines, or a judge. So we're not determining that here. However, prior to bringing this request to the board, we had negotiations with the property owner in an attempt to try to get from the property owner a demand. We have received a demand without an appraisal that is many multiples of the number our appraiser says is the fair value of the property. We've also received information about some instructions that the property owner has given to his appraiser, which we believe are inconsistent with the law. And so at this point, we don't have any we believe we've come to an impasse on settlement negotiations and are unable to resolve this short of going to court.
Thank you. Supervisor Ovid?
Yes, Mr. Howe, while you're there. It's also my understanding in this process, negotiations continue to go on. So in the event that any of this information does come forward, it is part of the process and the negotiation continues.
That's absolutely right. Nothing in the board's action today would preclude us from reaching a settlement with Mr. Philbin. So if Mr. Philbin has settlement offers to make today, we can consider those regardless of whether we adopt a resolution or not.
Okay. Any other questions from board supervisors? Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Philbin also mentioned that in his assessment, the entire 13 acres wasn't necessary, but that is not what your conclusion is. Is that correct?
That's correct, because we do think that, you know, given the surroundings of the airport, the approach protection is very important to us. So it's not just for the relocation of the road and for the interior roadway improvements that we need to make, but also to ensure that properties around the airport are compatible with airport operations and for future airport use. So we want to ensure that by acquiring the entire parcel.
Thank you.
Any other questions to staff? Seeing none. Mr. Philbin, we did close. Do you have a final comment to make?
Well, I have a question of this fine gentleman.
You need to ask the question to us.
All
please
right.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. He made a statement that in my directions to my appraiser, there's no appraiser hired yet. The contact with the appraiser to appraise this property and produce an MAI, which seemed to be what is necessary to go to court, said he couldn't get it done this quick, and he wasn't retained yet. He's standing by. So I don't know where he gets this stuff. And for the counter proposal, many multiples of the asking price, there's nothing in writing. There has been a verbal discussion between me and David Richman.
And your understanding is also that, regardless which direction the resolution goes, it's still.
Oh, everything's negotiable.
Negotiable. Okay.
Sure.
Thank you, sir. With that, I will bring it to Supervisor Lantol. It's your district.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Approve staff's recommendation here, subject to resolution of necessity. No motion.
I believe you were provided a revised resolution today. Is that the resolution you're asking to be adopted? I think County Council handed that out today.
Yes, You need me to read it or just say the revised resolution?
The revised resolution is fine.
Yes, good morning, Supervisors. Rita Neal, Deputy County Counsel. I did place in front of you this morning a revised resolution for your review.
Madam Counsel, would we make a copy of the revised resolution available for Mr. Philbin?
Was it in today's agenda package, Pacho?
Mr. Philbin, let me refer it to the council, and because we did receive this morning, and go back to the council for his remark.
Yes, good morning. The only revision on this resolution from the one that was in your board packet was under the findings and determinations, we added paragraph 7, which is essentially reiterates that this board had adopted the resolution 2006-194, which was for the environmental impact report on May 23rd. That's referenced earlier in the resolution, but we wanted to put it in the body of the findings and determinations, and that the board had considered all aspects of this project and that they were in conformity with the airport master plan. As I said, that really is identified earlier in the resolution, but we wanted to make sure that it got in the findings and determinations.
So even though it's revised, we're not introducing anything new.
That's correct.
Okay. Did you want to comment on this too?
I just wanted to make sure that Rita had addressed the changes that would have been made here.
Okay. But we're not talking any changes, so to say. We're reintroducing in writing.
We have a second. I'll second.
Okay.
Mic's not on.
You're not on.
The base of your mic.
The green one at the base.
How about the base?
The base of the microphone has a little button. It should be green.
No.
Lindholm.
The mic.
Thank you. For the record, I will just read into the record that paragraph. It states that the County of San Luis Obispo hereby further finds...
Would you give us the paragraph number for the record?
Yes, paragraph 7 on page 3. The County of San Luis Obispo hereby further finds and declares that the acquisition by condemnation of the...
Would you use Mr. Lindholm's...
That the acquisition by condemnation of the subject property and the project design is in conformity with the FEA EIR certified by resolution number 2006-194 adopted May 23rd, 2006. The effects of the condemnation were examined at a sufficient level of detail in the airport master plan FEA EIR that no subsequent or supplemental environmental document is needed in order to mitigate, to measure or mitigate the environmental effects.
And for the benefit of the listeners, would you tell us what FEA EIR stands for?
Final Environmental Assessment, Environmental Impact Report.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
With that, we have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk, do you have the motion maker, Supervisor Lindholm, and seconded by Supervisor Ovitt? Roll call, please.
Mr. Lindholm?
Aye.
Public comment is done.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. At this time, we'll move to...
Chairman Tatro?
Yes, sir.
Could I make a final remark?
Not usually after the closing to public. You know, I gave you the
opportunity. I understand.
But if you have a very short comment,
I'm not the public.
Please.
I'm the party of interest.
Right. That's
I'm the party being damaged. And your resolution says for the minimum of private injury. Mm-hmm. Your proceedings, I object to. I think they're illegal. I think I have the right to be noticed of what's going to be considered in its entirety and a proper length of time to understand it. I think my constitutional rights are being violated and tread upon. I'm here to hopefully work with you people, but the other alternative is there, and that's going to be expensive. But, for the record, I object to this steamroller proceedings. Your EIR is inadequate in time and in notice. Your staff presentation is inadequate as to the facts. My discussion with the head of FAA in San Francisco says they aren't concerned with the 13 acres. And if the county needs a little sliver for a road realignment, they have no objection one way or the other, and they have no requirements.
Okay.
So for the record, that's my facts.
Thank you, Mr. Philbin. And
thank you, Cacho.
And as we spoke, that negotiations can go forward even though the resolution has received a unanimous support. And with that, we'll, Madam Clerk, close session next on our agenda. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on the closed session items at this time? But I don't see. Oh, there you are. Please come forward, Reverend C. Hyde.
Reverend C. Hyde, M.A., public advocate. I'm here to speak to your significant exposure, which I have done for a length of time as a service that doesn't cost you anything. Your significant exposure lies in the fact that the county allows the city of San Luis Obispo to administer their housing program, where your citizens of the South County and the other cities have no remedy to the city of San Luis Obispo. The city of San Luis Obispo holds their public meetings at night where people are unable to attend because of public transportation. Your significant exposure lies in the fact that now the city is attempting to interfere with public transit so that South County residents can be a part of this community. This is the county seat. I conduct business in San Luis on Saturday and Sunday. I don't get paid for my work, but I'm very good at it. In the last year, I have just proved how very good I am of it when I don't pour my energies down a black hole, which is the county of San Luis Obispo. Your significant exposure lies in the fact that I've exhausted remedy with the county. Now, your significant exposure, Arroyo Grande, it lies in the fact that you continue to invite pedestrians to your festivals, but within 2.5 blocks of City Hall, your sidewalks are cracked. They are a public safety hazard. Your significant exposure, Arroyo Grande, lies in the fact that you can't bother to paint the curb red at the bus stop just across the street from City Hall, and that a bus has to double park to load wheelchair passengers, and your demographic shows that there is a significant amount of disabled people in the village. Your significant exposure lies in the fact that a bus double parked and that a disabled man turned out of his wheelchair right there at City Hall into the street. And the bus would not wait for him, although another disabled passenger was holding the bus. The bus just didn't want to bother taking the time to load a wheelchair, which takes just under 3 minutes. Now, your significant exposure, Arroyo Grande, is that when a person falls on those sidewalks or falls into the streets, whether they're trying to walk or whether they're rolling in a wheelchair, they no longer have transportation to the hospital through the senior disabled cab rides, which I need to note for the public record was never called disabled cab ride. The disabled just had to figure out what their rights were and try to assert their rights. Your significant exposure lies in the fact that David Lilly put it in print a number of years ago, that he wanted to implement the free Lopez Lake rides to tourists and cut out that senior taxi ride. And there were options through the Grover Beach Cab Company.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Lindholm, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, the board is meeting in closed session on the items which were listed on the agenda.
We'll adjourn to closed session and return at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Morning, Bishop.
which were listed on the agenda. The board took no final action in closed session, which means that no public report is required, and that's today's public report. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, next item, please.
Next item on today's agenda is item C5. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by Raymond Cardoza of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of his request for a vesting tentative parcel map using the Transfer of Development Credits Program to subdivide an existing 10-acre parcel into two parcels of 5 acres each for the purpose of sale and or development. Proposed project is located at 7655 Finestra Road, approximately 3.4 miles north of the community of Creston in the 1st District. This item was continued from March 14, 2006. Recommendations for conditional approval of the vesting tentative map. What did I say?
Thank you. And representing the Planning and Building Department, Mr. Josh Lombard.
Josh Lombard, Planning Staff. This is a continued hearing to hear an appeal by Raymond Cardoza of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of his request to use the TDC credit program to subdivide an existing 10-acre parcel into two parcels of 5 acres each. This property is located at 7655 Feenstra Road, as you can see on this vicinity map. That's within the residential rural land use category. It's adjacent to a lot of agricultural land use category properties, and there is a small swath of residential suburban within that residential rural development there. This is a proposal, or this is the site plan of the proposal. The boundary in red right there is showing the entire 10-acre parcel and the two resulting 5-acre parcels from this proposal here. This appeal was originally heard at the March 14th board hearing, and at that hearing, staff brought forward findings for denial of this appeal. Your board directed staff to come back with findings and conditions of approval for this project with an added condition that prohibits development of a secondary residence on both of the proposed parcels. There was a request for review of the proposed mitigated negative declaration that was prepared as a result of coming back to your board with findings for approval. The concerns that were raised were regarding air pollution, inconsistency with the intent of the TDC ordinance, and potential cumulative impacts resulting from the division of this property within rural land. The responses to the individual items raised are found within your staff report, and I can go over any specific ones that, if your board wishes me to. Our recommendation is that you adopt the resolution reversing the decision of the SRB and conditionally approving vesting tentative parcel map CO04352 based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B, and I'm here if you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Seeing none, we go to the appellant. Mr. Dana, would you be representing Mr. Cardoza, or?
I am. Thank you.
Okay, so that way we'll give you 10 minutes.
Only need 10 seconds, but thank you. Based upon the new conditions, the applicant is willing to comply with everything submitted by staff. We thank you for the additional consideration of the matter.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Public, Anthony Azarito.
Anthony Azarito, 7590 Feenstra Road. Good afternoon. And what I've seen, as I know I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, but I've seen nothing concerning the road. The road is not an approved road. It is not a county road. It does not even meet the county specs. From what the county has, I don't know if I can find, yes, actually right here. Residential rural category as far as minimum parcel size, 5 acres. Right of way, minimum 40 feet. Surfacing, county standard paved road. Maintenance. Organized or public maintenance. That is what the county requires. I've seen nothing of that. And if that is allowed, if this is allowed to happen without the road being brought up, then how am I going to get back and forth to my house? And as far as, you know, there was a minor use permit that was authorized or was granted on our road. And this is just a quick little story as to why I keep coming down here. We thought we had everything covered. The people were going to have a business, training horses. We had it written up in their proposal and in the stipulation that they would not train the horses on the road. Because this is a road we need to drive on. Well, needless to say, after numerous sheriff's department calls and after going to the county and complaining, you want to know what the county said to me? Oh, yes, it says there that there will be no training of the horses done on the road, but it doesn't say that they can't. So this is what I've been dealing with the county. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Greening?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I, as you know, with the TDC receiver sites, I always bring up the cumulative impacts because I'm still not convinced. And I was glad to see that the request for review brought up that issue. My plea is that when you do make, and I hope you do make some changes in the TDC ordinance, because I think both of the main ones that are in front of you will be improvements, and when you set a committee working on a sort of a rethinking of the ordinance, that we do what we possibly can to get data about these cumulative impacts. Right now we've got a dialogue back and forth, you know, sort of he said, she said, that the fees are covering the impacts, et cetera, et cetera. We know that this program is creating about five times more entitlements than it's retiring. Common sense would say that there are cumulative impacts from the receiver sites created by this program. And so I just hope we start looking for real hard data so that we can actually make an assessment as to whether the cumulative impacts are significant, whether they're being mitigated, and if not, then we know we need to do something else to abide by CEQA. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to comment on this item? And since it's this is an appeal, we'll give the appellant the last closing remarks, please.
Thank you for letting me speak. Just a quick reminder that...
Would you also please give us your name for the record?
Ray Cardoza is my name. I'm the one splitting the lot there. And from what I've seen, my daughter lives in the house just down the street from Mr. Acevedo there. And Mr. Acevedo lives right across the cattle guard. And from what I've seen out there, every neighbor would do something just in front of their own home and not consider anybody else on the whole street. I don't really mind as a thank you to just grade the road one time, clean it up and make it nice and make it more passable, because it's not terrible, but I mean, I'd rather get along than have any kind of problems with any neighbors, and I don't mind grading the road at all. I just want to make that clear to anybody that that's what has to be done. I would be glad to do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
With that, I will close the public comment period. Question for staff. Mr. Zarito's concern about roads.
Condition 2.
And doesn't the Condition 2 addresses that?
Condition 2 does address that. What it says, if you look at Condition 2B, I think that's the most clearly written one there. It says that Feenster Road will be constructed to a 2/3 A7C from the property to Cripple Creek with a minimum paved area of 18 feet. So from the property on Feenster Road to Cripple Creek, it's going to be paved minimum 18 feet wide.
Okay.
And I also have an amendment to the conditions here. We're going to be adding condition 16 here on recommendation from County Council. It's our typical indemnification clause. It's recommended by them to add that in as condition number 16.
And the applicant is aware of that?
We just handed it to the applicant, so hopefully they're aware.
Okay. No objection? Okay. With that, Mr. Ovid.
Move to recommend staff's, approve staff's recommendation as amended.
Okay. We have a motion by Supervisor Ovid. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Mr. Shahjian?
Aye. With that, we'll move forward to the next item, please.
Next item is item C6. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by SDS Family Trust of the Planning Department Hearing Officer's approval of their request for a minor use permit, coastal development permit, DRC 2004-00125, to allow the construction of a new 4,576-square-foot barn, the remodeling of an existing single-family residence, and the installation of the new septic system for the existing residence in the second district. Recommendation, modifying the decision of the hearing officer and conditionally approving the application.
Thank you. Would that be Mr. Hogue?
Chair Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. I'd like to introduce Ryan Hostetter of our Coastal Geographic team, and she'll give the staff presentation today.
Ryan Hostetter, County Planning Staff. The project includes a property along Highway 1. It's on the west side of Highway 1, approximately 2 miles south of Harmony. It's within the agriculture land use category and in the sterile planning area. This is an aerial photograph of the site. The development within the project description is going to be occurring on the very northern portion of the property. The project description includes constructing a new 4,576-square-foot barn, remodeling of an existing ranch house, and revision of a coastal access condition of approval that was placed on the proposed project. The new barn within the project is located about 200 feet southeast of the existing residence. It's located in the same spot as an old barn that had been there previously but had fallen down. This is an example of one of the elevations. The new barn is proposed to be 28 feet in height. This is the old barn. The old barn is 3,800 square feet approximately, and the new barn does have a larger footprint. It's about 776 square feet larger approximately. This is a photo simulation on the screen of what the new barn will look like. The materials include unfinished natural wood siding and weathered corrugated metal roofing to mimic the look of the older barn. This is another visual simulation. This is if you were looking towards the north, driving north on Highway 1, this is what you would see. The minor use permit was approved by the hearing officer in a planning department hearing on March 17th. The applicant appealed the project shortly after due to a couple conditions of approval that were on the project, one of them being coastal access and another one relating to outdoor lighting. The first issue we're going to discuss is coastal access. And Section 2304.420 of the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance requires coastal access for new development projects. The proposed project is a new development project because the barn is larger than the previous barn. It's not a replacement barn because the old barn had fallen down due to reasons that were out of the applicant's that were not out of the applicant's control. It did not fall down due to a natural disaster or something of that nature. Based on that, staff feels that coastal access, it's a requirement of the ordinance. The applicant is proposing new development under the definition of development in the Coastal Act. However, we've looked deeply into the nexus issue here with this proposed project, and staff has tossed and turned over this issue. However, we feel that because footprint is being added to the property, the barn is more than almost 800 square feet larger than the old barn. Remodeling of the house includes grading and of a new septic system. So staff feels that coastal access, to meet the coastal access requirement of the ordinance, some should be required. However, the nexus issue comes into play. So because of the scope of the project, we feel that a limited coastal access would be appropriate in this case. The new access condition, which is actually an offer to dedicate, is limited to 25 feet of dry sandy beach, or where that doesn't exist, between the mean high tide line and the toe of bluff, all within the area known as China Harbor on their property. This is an aerial view of China Harbor. It includes approximately 2,000 feet of the coastline, just under half of the coastline that the applicants contain on their whole project site. I'm going to go through some photos of the area that we call China Harbor. This is a view looking north. This is down on the harbor. I did go on the NOAA website to check tides during this time because I wasn't sure what the tide was. It, when we were out here, it was, about May 11th, and it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The tides were not at their lowest, but they were on the lower end and on their way in, so it gets a little bit lower than this, but this is probably close to about a low tide here. This is another view. These shots are actually looking north. This is looking south. This is kind of the end of the China Harbor. This is the center of it. There's a rock outcrop. It is very rocky in this section. We were able to climb through it, but it is rocky. And this is a panorama of that section of coastline. I did want to point out that the condition is an offer to dedicate, which means that nothing on the property changes at this point with the offer to dedicate until such time as an entity accepts the offer and assumes maintenance and liability over that section. So if it is not accepted, the offer will expire after 21 years. The other issue was outdoor lighting. The minor use permit had a condition which limited the outdoor lighting on the property. Staff revised it to allow outdoor lighting, however, with full shields and timers and sensors to try to keep the skies dark in this location and because of visual issues from Highway 1. With that, staff recommends that the board adopt the resolution modifying the decision of the hearing officer and conditionally approving the application of SDS Family Trust for minor use permit, coastal development permit, DRC 2004-00125, based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B. And before I conclude, I have a couple of housekeeping items. We would like to add a new condition at the end, similar to the last project, for the indemnification clause. So if we could add that as condition, let me get the number. Number 15. And there's another small correction I would like to make in the report. It's on, page C62, under discussion. At the end of the first paragraph under discussion, it says that it's in the North Coast Planning Area, and that's incorrect. It's actually the Darrow Planning Area.
Could you restate that, please?
It's in the Estero planning area, not the North Coast. And that concludes my presentation. I'm available for questions.
If I may, please, is the size of the barn a question, or they can build a barn? Is there a limitation to the size of the barn?
The applicant is not limited to size with this minor use permit. They can build a larger barn if they wish.
My experience with sensors, when you have fog coming in and out, it doesn't serve the purpose. Is there another way to address the light fixture that it doesn't lead towards the Highway 1, but they can towards their property? Because my understanding is the barn came down because of theft and other activities that were involved. Rather than apply a sensor or timer.
Okay. Certainly, we can revise that condition if your board wishes to just do full shielded lighting and not have sensors. We can remove that portion of condition if you feel that's appropriate and the applicants are okay.
And I'm looking at what you showed us as far as the rocky area and the sand area. Which is which? Which one is in front of this property?
Let's go back to those photos. So there are two small sandy portions. In this photograph, on the left-hand side, that is the southern portion. And then in the center, it's rocky. And then on the right-hand side, this is all China Harbor, by the way. On the right-hand side, there's another sandier spot. Now, the rocks get larger as you get to the toe of the bluff. But if you were to walk straight through there, the rocks aren't as large through the center there.
But during high tide, you have no choice but to get on the larger rocks.
Correct. During high tide, in the center portion, you will be forced to climb over some larger rocks.
Do you mind repeating what you said about liability?
Absolutely. The condition as it is now, it's an offer to dedicate. And the applicant or the property owner has liability at this point in time currently, and we understand that historically kayakers and people have been coming to this section of beach, and the owners have liability if something were to happen. And it's going to remain that way until an entity accepts the offer to dedicate, and then the liability is transferred, and including maintenance, over to the entity that accepts it, and this could be a Coastal Conservancy or a Land Conservancy or Parks.
So the access is not vertical from the property itself?
That's correct. A vertical access, we've determined that will have conflicts with the agricultural operation on the site, as it would run straight across the property from the road. It would be perpendicular to the coast in that case.
I know we talked about this, and Mr. Hogan and I tried to clarify this, and if I may ask one more time, if you have access from the ocean, if you're kayaking and you want to come to this property, if that's within the coastal understanding, why do we have to deal with it if it's already exist? If they have the right to come to this property, why are we repeating something that exists?
Well, currently we don't necessarily know if they have the quote-unquote right to be on the property today. We don't know. If it's a prescriptive right, the courts would have to determine if there's a prescriptive right in that instance. The difference would be is at the end of the day, if an entity were to accept the offer to dedicate, then the public would have the right to be on that location. Does that help?
I'm trying to, probably those who are listening to us know where I was coming from because of the access. It some people, when you say access to the beachfront, as it is in the areas of Pismo Beach by the Cliffs Hotel, let's say they can park their car on the street and walk on by the hotel or the resort area and go to the beach and enjoy. It's not the case here. This is, you got to be on the from the ocean front to come to the property. I'm sure it's some people desire to come here, but the more I look at the rocks, the more suspicious I got. Is this a welcoming site, or is this a challenging site, or would there be some problems here? But let me move on to Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps County Council can give us some clarification. It's my understanding that property below the mean high tide line is actually accessible to the public. Is that not the case?
That is the case, but there are all sorts of problems with where the mean high tide line is and how you get to the area below the mean high tide line. But I think the main problem is, where is the mean high tide line?
Right, so that has to be, but well, I guess in terms of definition then, it's accessible to the public below that.
Yes, that below correct? The mean high tide line, that's
okay.
Correct.
And in this particular case, it would be access only from the ocean, not across the private property.
That's correct.
Okay. And Ms. Hostetter, one question I have is regarding the new construction. You said the nexus really is relevant in this case because of the new septic system and the fact that they're enlarging the barn by, you know, approximately 20% or so. Typically, are new septic systems considered, well, and I say new, replacement septic systems, are they considered new construction?
Well, the construction activity that would take place to put it in, which includes grading in this area, it's in between the first public road and the ocean, and grading of a new septic system would fall under the definition of development in the Coastal Act, in which case that grading would require a use permit.
Okay, so that's what triggers it. It's
yes.
Not the fact that you're replacing a septic system. It's the work that, and the definition.
Grading and additional footprint of the barn.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So if they chose to keep the septic tank, this won't be an issue?
Well, there's additional footprint of the barn, which is development, and...
But it's not for residential use, the barn.
That's correct. It's not for residential use. The remodel of the house, if they left the septic system alone and there was no grading being done, if the work that is being done on the house does not require a use permit, if basically a use permit is not required, then we wouldn't have this condition.
Even if they replace the barn, you still have to have a use permit. Because any development is done on the coastal side causes a use permit. It doesn't make a difference what it is.
Between the first public road. That's correct.
Michael, sorry, if somebody wants to change the septic tank, which should be encouraged because of the proximity to the ocean and possibilities of failures of oil tanks, and probably they don't want to do it because it raises all these red flags.
That's correct. I think that we would have to look at exactly at what the applicant was doing and look at plans. There are instances where there is repair and maintenance, but it's on a case-by-case basis, we'd have to look closely at the project.
Thank you. Any other questions from supervisors? Seeing none, we'll go to the applicant at this time, and we'll give you about 10 minutes to make a presentation, please.
Sure.
Yeah, please use the microphone before we start the timer. Be sure it's working. And if anybody wishes to speak, please fill up those forms and bring them forward.
Pull that up. Hold it. Yeah. Pull that microphone out.
Hold it.
The other one worked. Pull the microphone out.
This is all right. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay. I also have some letters here from the Ag Liaison. Can I submit those?
It'd be better if you hold it because we won't be able to hear you when you get away from the mic. Just pull it out of the holder.
The other one works.
There you go.
Here?
There.
That's good.
I have some letters here from the Ag Liaison. Can I submit those now?
Sure, please.
How many do I need to submit?
Six, or no, today five. Is an R or a P? Copeland, Corman?
I'd say Corman.
Those are some letters that I just received today from Joy Fitchu that I didn't get an opportunity to present when I met with you all earlier.
Okay. And let me interrupt you for a second and we'll start the timer. Are we having problems, or you're here for?
Yeah,
No.
And we're also going to need your name for the record.
Right. Do I just tell you to go to next slide when I'm ready? All right. So we're a team. Okay, go for it.
You're on.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Pat Molnar. I'm a cattle rancher from Cayucas. I'm here today representing SDS Family Trust. My brother and I also run cows on this particular piece of property. Objectives of today is to remove a conditional requirement on our minor use permit dedicating of shoreline for public access and to allow for overnight shielded illumination for security and ag operations. Okay. The project does not meet easement criteria. There is no nexus for the easement. The septic system is a replacement system. We actually could have left the old 50-gallon drum there, but we figured we better get it out of there. And restoration of the house is not new construction. We didn't increase the square footage of the house at all, and the barn, of course, is a replacement exclusively for agriculture. This is a picture of China Harbor. What we did was we had Sierra Delta come out, and they took some elevations and shot in basically mean sea level, which is the small blue arrow to the right, or blue line to the right. Then 3.5 feet vertically above that would be mean high tide line, and that's what it is. Now, the property, the title on the property says more or less to the mean high tide line of the Pacific Ocean. So that's apparently what's in discrepancy right now. We don't make a habit of kicking people off the beach whenever we see them there. We do have a habit of kicking them off the bluffs. So what we're saying is there's already access there now, and there's no more usable ground above the mean high tide line. Next, please. And so here's a view looking down on what mean high tide line would be. You can see that there's a bunch of driftwood along the toe of the bluff, along with big rocks. And again, we don't feel as though there's going to be any more significant ground available to anybody if this easement, in fact, goes through. Okay. This is from Mike's Kayak Journal. This is an ongoing site on the web. It says China Harbor is perfect for landing kayaks, almost as good as I'd hoped. And they go on to talk about how they tried to find a dry place, and over time when the high tide came in, it washed over a little berm, and they tried to clear out an area right at the toe, but they were concerned about that, so they moved a little bit and cleaned off some rocks. The bottom line is what we're trying to show here is this happens all the time. We know from history, from us being there for about the last 8 years, that people show up there by boat. They spend the day there, then they leave, or if they spend the night, high tide comes in. Well, they don't leave. They go up to the bluff. It's about a 40-foot walk up the bluff, up the steep cliff to the bluff, and they camp right there. And so that's what we're concerned about, okay? There's easy access. There's about two places there that is fairly easy to get from what they consider the beach up to the bluff. You can see from this picture here that these rounded cobbles that have been beaten by the surf are deposited right up to the toe of the bluff, along with seaweed that obviously isn't dried up, and a bunch of driftwood. So the tide does come up to that bluff quite often. And what happens again, they don't leave. They don't get in their boat and swim out of there at 2 in the morning. They climb up to the bluff. Okay. Shoreline does not contain 25 feet of dry sandy beach. The problem we have with this section is that all the county seems to be asking for now is 25 feet of dry sandy beach. Then that part of the code reads, if that's unavailable, mean high tide line to toe of the bluff. Then it goes on. That actual particular piece of the code goes on and says, county shall evaluate the safety and other constraints and whether alternative siting is appropriate. In the staff report, they actually put the entire lateral easement of that entire piece of property. Then, item number 8, they just framed it back down to mean high tide line toe of the bluff or 25 feet of dry sandy beach. What we're concerned about is we're not sure that they can do that with the ordinance. I don't think they can take the ordinance and pick and choose what they want out of it and then expect us to have any level of comfort as to what that actually says. So we're really concerned about that. Rockfall and sharp rocks. You can see from this photo here that there is a lot of seaweed and things growing on those darker rocks. That's where the water is most of the time. And from there, it's extremely dangerous. Rock cobbles everywhere. There is sand, but the sand is underwater most of the time because it's under mean sea level. So we're concerned that we make a very big impression on you that this is a very dangerous beach, and if somebody gets hurt on that beach, they're not going to swim back out. They're going to come up to the toe of the bluff, and here comes the fire trucks. Easement adversely affects agriculture. Obviously, when the tide comes in, people move up to the bluff. That disrupts the grazing pattern of the ranch. What happens here is cattle have a grazing pattern. They graze around a particular ranch. Well, what we've tried to do is move water down to that coastal shelf, and it's about a half mile long, and it's pretty wide. So what happens is people move up there, and especially cows with young calves, they get sturdy. They don't even have to see them you can see them a half mile away. And if there's a little movement, or if they're setting up a tent, or if they're talking, those cows see that, and they get a little sturdy, and they leave. And so we've been having a real hard time keeping cows down on that bluff until late in the year, like the fall, when the days are short, people don't want to come there very much. Then those cows move back in there and utilize that feed. So it is extremely disruptive, especially in the summertime, to try to get those cows to stay down there, because this happens at least twice or three times a month from people this time of year. And in the summer, when the school gets out, it's even more than that. The barn is for ag use only. The original barn was around 3,000. The new one will be 4,500 square feet. That's a picture of the barn right there. And obviously, we've changed the use of the barn from when it was originally built. We plan on having a cattle shipping facility there. Now the corrals are up on the hill. We have trouble with coming off the hill with a trailer full of cattle. They all want to bunch up to the front. So we're going to ship cows out of this new barn. We're going to put in some horse facilities there, some stalls. We're going to have an area to store hay and big equipment. We're also going to build a room in there that's hopefully going to be burglar-proof, and then have an area off the back of it for smaller animals. This is a picture of the barn now. The reason why that barn fell down is because people came out and stole the barn wood off there to side whatever. We'd come out, see some barn wood gone. We'd see some more barn wood gone. Big wind came up. They took all the shear away. The barn blew over. We had a set of the previous person that was leasing the ranch had a set of Powder River panels, portable cattle corrals. The entire set of corrals were stolen in one night. People came in, actually packed them out to the road, stole the whole thing. The houses have been ransacked. Everything that you could imagine was picked up and carried off. The yellow arrow indicates the light that we have up there now that apparently is causing such a stir. We have a need for adequate lighting, obviously to enhance the operational function of the ranch. It's about 1,500 feet from the barn to Highway 1, and of course you can't see the ocean. You have to go over a big steep ridge to get to the ocean, so that's not an issue. The idea is to discourage trespassing. What we're worried about with the lighting being on sensors or on timers is that most of the time the lights will be off. What we're looking for is the lights to be on all the time, and if the lights are off, that sends up a red flag. So we have the sheriff, when they drive by, we tell them, look, if the lights are off, call us. We have a lot of the locals that live in that area. If you see that light off, call us. Because what happens is people come out there, shoot the light out, and steal everything. But if there's a light on, someone will see activity over there and see that something's going on, and they'll investigate. And that's what we're hoping that you allow us to do. We don't mind shielding it so it can't be seen from the road, shining straight down. We would just like to have it on. We have letters of support from the Cattlemen's Association, the Farm Bureau, and the Ag Liaison. Those letters of support, by the way, were unanimous, which is saying something when you consider the Ag Liaison, but it was quite nice to see that happen. I just presented a letter to you. They also had a real problem with the fact that they considered a replacement barn and remodeling an old home, new construction. They feel like that's extremely intrusive. The end of my presentation. I appreciate it, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Yes. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding, Mr. Molnar, that it is not the remodeling of the home that's considered new construction. It's the grading in association with the septic system and then the enlargement of the barn.
Right. We put that in our presentation because the previous minor use permit that we walked away from, that was what they were considering the nexus was the remodeling of that home. That's why we're very unsure of where to go with this, because Steve McMaster said putting the barn on there wouldn't be a problem. So we put the barn on. Now the barn is the nexus. But him and I and Matt Jansen had a meeting out there on our first minor use permit 3 years ago, and he said it wouldn't be a problem. So we added the barn, and here we are with a problem.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that after the presentation today, you were clear that it wasn't the remodeling of the house that was an issue.
Right.
A question regarding the trespassing. You said there's really been a history of problems with that. Do you think that the trespassing problems originate from the coastal access or from Highway 1?
Well, it depends. There's been a history of surfers walking in to surf, history of people, kayakers, and boaters coming to China Cove, China Harbor, and enjoying that area. We also have trespassing of people thieving the place. So it seems to me there, when I think about the trespassing, I see it three different ways. We have a significant problem with surfers, significant problem with boaters, and a significant problem with people walking in off the highway at night, you know, pilfering, rifling through all the stuff around the house in the barn area.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. I was just trying to, in my mind, see how not having an offer to dedicate would in any way affect or resolve the problem with people coming to shore in China Harbor. I would think maybe in some instances it would be to your benefit if someone took that offer to dedicate and took the liability off the owner's shoulders and assumed it themselves. So I don't know that that would necessarily be a bad thing.
Well, we don't believe that. Right now we can shoot them. We can't if you guys dedicate it. No, joke. They can go up to mean high tide line anyway now. And like I say, we knew that all along. So that's why we don't make it a habit of kicking people off the beach. We let them use that as much as they want. But we know from history that what they do is when the water comes in, they go, and they go to the bluff. I mean, it's 40 feet up, nice grass right along the toe of that bluff. It's a pretty neat place. And people use that. And that's what's upsetting to us.
Okay. But nothing would change unless someone...
No, I don't think... Personally, I don't think that our liability is encumbered any more by them using it now. In other words, we know they can come to mean high tide line, so what are they going to say? Well, we were above mean high tide line and we got hurt? You know, I mean, that doesn't make sense to us. And knowing what we know now, we'll probably post some signs down there and have them destroyed like all the other ones have been, because people come and they see 3 or 4 feet up on the above the toe. We put signs in there, no trespassing, and they tear them down and throw them away, and away we go. So, anyway.
Okay.
Just to follow up on that, if Land Conservancy was to take over, the only way they can control this is by putting a fence, which will be then unacceptable probably from view shed off the coastline. I don't know if you care to answer, but...
Ryan Hoster, County Planning Staff. I'm not sure if that they would or wouldn't put a fence there. I don't know.
So more want to talk about other access. Are those vertical access or similar access?
I'm sorry.
Other existing access?
Oh, the property directly to the north adjacent to this site is a state parks property, and there will be vertical access through there. There's no vertical access proposed on this project site, as that will conflict with the agricultural operation. Just lateral access, which is parallel to the water, if you will. That's what we're asking for.
So as it does exist, this property, people have access vertically and from the ocean, laterally.
Vertically on the neighboring property owned by state parks, if they can, you can't really get from there to China Harbor, though. You'd have to pretty much kayak in, though.
And another question to either one of you. You say this is the light fixture is about 1,500 feet away from Highway 1. Do we have an ordinance that there need to be a minimum distance from Highway 1?
No, the barn is about 800, 900 feet, the proposed barn.
We're talking about the light fixture.
Mm-hmm. There isn't a minimum.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one.
Please.
Ms. Hostetter, Mr. Molnar made reference to the section you're quoting from the land use ordinance regarding coastal access, and he is uncertain that our staff is able to modify it the way that it has. Is that typically done, or what's your...
Staff feels that the condition number 8 is what would be codified. That is what we are looking at. There is discussion in the staff report where we actually wrote out the full coastal access requirement as it is in the ordinance, because we were discussing that that is what the ordinance requirement is. But the requirement we put on the proposed project is condition number 8.
I see. Okay. And so that would hold up over the language of the full ordinance.
Yes, it's subject to condition number 8.
Okay.
Okay, Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Roller, I want to make sure I understood you correctly. We talked about, or I believe staff mentioned, some grading and upgrading and replacing the septic, and you said today that you're replacing a 55-gallon drum with, I assume, a concrete or a 1,200-gallon approved tank or whatever like that. Is there additional grading going on, or are you just replacing the tank and the septic system?
Just the septic system. It had to be engineered the way the PERC test came in. It had to be engineered, so it wasn't what was there. Was a 255-gallon drums with that old black tar pipe going to it.
Orangeburg.
Even older than that, actually. Yeah. And so there wasn't, we can't replace that septic system in that location because it was too close to a stream, a creek that ran behind the house. So we had to pick an alternative site, and then they did a perk test on it, and the thing didn't perk all that well, so it had to be, you know, the field had to be extended to 800 feet or whatever it is, over and above 600 feet. So 200 more square feet of leach field had to be added. So that's all that entails that. So that location needed to be different, and obviously the size of the leach field needed to be a lot bigger than what it was.
Okay, when I think of grading, I think that you're going to change the topography or something out there on the
right
field or what you no. see. My question to you then, if you're moving the leach field, which is obviously below ground, after that's done, will there be any change in the topography, any grading or moving dirt from one side of the property to the other, or anything of that nature, other than putting in, obviously, gravel and things like that for a leach field?
No, absolutely not. The same topography, the topography will stay the same because we can use elevations as far as setting the tank and setting the leach field and using trajectories of running contours and things with the leach field. So it's not an issue at all as to change the topography. There will be some disturbed dirt when we're done, which obviously we reseed, and by next year, you'll never know it's there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Well,
thank you.
At closing, we'll have you come back for closing remarks. If no other comments or questions by supervisors, staff, do you have anything to add before I go to the public?
Nothing further to add.
Okay. First speaker is Tony Schrick, and followed by, is it Sharon Schrick?
Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to testify at the hearing regarding our family's request for a conditional use permit to finish repairs in our house at China Harbor. My name is Tony Schrick. I am the husband of Sharon Schrick. Sharon is one of the S, she's the S in SDS. Denise is the D in SDS, and then another daughter, Sandra, has got a son graduating from eighth grade today, is the other S in SDS. You can see there are a multitude of issues here, as we talked about then. It's gone on for a prolonged period of time for numerous reasons. I want to say that the permitting process has been drug out in part by our own personal issues. There was the Northridge earthquake. This was my father-in-law who has set up the family trust, who ended up falling and breaking his hip, having bladder cancer, and finally succumbing from a fall while he was undergoing treatment for kidney dialysis. And So we were focusing in different places, which has bug out the permit, and it's been, some of it's been our process as well as others. What I would like to address is the report indicates that there were repairs made to the home, and you saw maybe some pictures of the house that were made without the necessary permits. And our contractor, Paul Shaner, obtained from the county permits to repair the foundation, the roof, the siding, and the interior wall framing that was done on individual permits. We didn't try to go around or outside the building department. We tried to work with the building department. And in fact, I want to say that the building inspector was on the grounds. He was an interesting gentleman. He was very pleased with the repairs. If you've gone by seen the house, you've seen that the house, we've even had customized siding made for the house. Now, the other thing is that they issued, the report indicates that a stop work order was issued. A stop work order was not issued. We did not want, we wanted to continue with the individual permitting process rather than to go to a conditional use permit process. This was in 6702, 4 years ago tomorrow. This is the reason why we were reluctant to do this. It's 4 years later. We've spent $225,000 to finish a house, and we get these restrictive conditions applied to the conditional use permit. Now, there was never a order issued to stop work. We did contest it. But, okay. Now, in 04, 2 years later, after we applied for the permit, we get the permit, and at that time they asked for a lateral easement. The lateral easement for us was unacceptable. Therefore, we've gone through this continuing hearing process. At the hearing process...
Mr. Strick, would you conclude, please?
Yes, sir. We met with different individuals to try to get some... This is Mr. McMasters and Mr. Jensen to try to get some joint understanding and resolution to it. We thought we verbally had it. Each time we'd get the decisions, they would be changed by staff recommendations. I really want us to get some closure to this, please. I'm getting to the age of retirement. I want to enjoy the home.
Thank you.
Thank you, sirs.
Sharon, followed by Denise McLaughlin. Did Eric get a...
It's not working.
Sharon, would you go to either one of those two, please? It works better. Yeah, that's good. That's a good one, dear. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm Sharon Schrick, the first S and SDS. I wanted to just mention that our father bought the property at an auction. He had never seen it before he bought it. He just read about it in a flyer and thought it would be a nice piece of property to own. It was similar in some ways to other properties that he had bought, where we own five farms in Kentucky. Two of the houses are log cabin houses, which he restored. One is a property in Fillmore, which is an orange ranch, and that house was built in 1908, and he restored that. We were working with various permits, and we had been complimented on the way we were doing the house because we had done things such as restored the double-hung windows instead of replacing them with the modern windows. But we thought we were moving along fine until we were asked to combine the permits into one large permit. And that was when the requirement for the beach access first happened. Before that, there was nothing said. The house, I wanted to mention that the house is actually smaller than the footprint of the original house, because the building inspector that we had saw a sort of wooden awning that connected a tank at the back of the house to the back of the house. And at the time, I couldn't find the original picture to prove that the back room was part of the original house. But we lost square footage because of that decision by the inspector. But I could prove that the back room on the house was original. The barn size was never discussed as being any problem because it was an ag barn, and we have six horses, and my husband has 23 cows at home, and we like you know, we raise cattle at home too and wanted to be able to do that at this property as well as with the Molnars. I wanted to also mention that on the septic tank, the offer to repair the septic system was never made to us. We certainly could repair it if that would be a possibility. But in the meantime, we were required to get geology and archaeological reports as well as other reports that they said were needed in order for us to get the septic system and to be able to do the driveway around the house, which isn't a driveway, but it's just a rock driveway. Then on the insurance...
Ms. Schrick, would you please conclude it?
Okay. The insurance is very expensive for people, you know, in case there's accidents on the property. And everybody knows what the rules are concerning the use of the beach in California. Thank you.
Thank you. Denise, followed by Ben Corman. And that's the last request to speak. If anybody else wants to speak, please bring forward a request form. Either one of them is fine, ma'am.
Hello. Thank you for hearing
us. You can pull that forward if you would like to.
Gentlemen and lady. I'm Denise McLaughlin, and I'm one of the owners of the property. And I just wanted to bring a few historical features to your attention. When we bought the property in 92, we began immediately that year to go ahead and get some bids and begin some construction work and get permits. However, during the period of 93, when we were doing a lot of this, getting bids and estimates and discovering what we could do, at that time, it turned out to be about the end of 93, and then 94, the Northridge earthquake hit. Well, we're based in that area, and we had some rental properties that in our homes that were affected heavily by the Northridge earthquake. So we were affected monetarily as well as having to do retrofit and rebuilding of our properties down there. So we were financially, you know, tethered for a while before we could get back to this project up here. So finally, when we did get back to the project at this house, some time had elapsed. And so therefore, various types of permitting process had changed. And we heard that in 1995, the Estero draft was to begin being changed, and the plan was changed. I guess it was March of 2000 finalized, I believe. But anyway, the local, like I said, these things affected how we could proceed on this project. We had some older permits still available, and we began to repair the house around, I think it was in May of 99. Also, there were physical problems that my dad had at the time, too, so that kind of set us back. But we had these older permits, and we began with new building plans and to just get right into restoring this house. And then we were continuing the progress using this, and we were not in violation, as far as we were aware, of any construction without proper permitting, because as far as we were concerned, we were following the rules, and the inspector was out regularly, and we were proceeding. But then we were told that we needed to combine all these previous permits under one permit for ease through the planning department, and then we weren't aware that this was going to create some kind of a process that would trigger a lateral easement request. This was not something so we went ahead and we allowed them to combine the permit under one permit. And then this condition was added at a later time. So we didn't wish to proceed with that minor use permit, which was approved at the time it so happened. When that was approved,
McLaughlin, would you conclude, please?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to state, too, that I feel that the proportionality of the construction that we're doing, the repairs to a house, has no proportion to the kind of demand made of us for this lateral easement. There isn't a reasonable relationship, and there's a private toilet and water to a private house and a barn. Okay. Doesn't.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Corman?
Hello, supervisors. My name's Ben Corman. I designed the barn on the property. And as I was designing the barn, it was kind of interesting because, you know, I look back at the history of how barns were built. I went through the county where I can tell you and took pictures of various barns throughout the county in order to make it historically relevant. And it occurred to me that, you know, my position as a designer of the barn and, you know, the county's position aren't even needed because back when barns were built like in the style that we're trying to duplicate, people like Pat went out and just built barns. And so we went through every effort we could to, you know, mimic that style of ranchers going out and picking up local materials and erecting barns. So when someone like Pat comes up to me and says, Ben, you know, can you design some lighting and I need some horse stalls and I need room for tractors, I just go ahead and do it because throughout the times, you know, the ranchers have been stewards of the land and have dictated the construction of barns. So as far as the lighting is concerned, it seems to me if the rancher needs lighting, the rancher deserves to have lighting in order for the barn to stay up and be functional. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, Mr. Molnar, would you do the closing? Do you have anything else to add? Please, we're going to limit that to 3 minutes.
Thank you, Pat Molnar, again. The last thing I had was the staff report also said, in addition, staff acknowledges that having too much coastal access to this property may lead to adverse impacts on sensitive coastal resources and the existing agriculture operation. I think by default, this easement will cause us hardship because, as we know, like I say from history, people are not going to stay on the beach. They're going to climb up the bluff because that's been happening to us ever since we've been on the ranch. And so I'd like you to take that into consideration. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public comment period, bring it back to supervisors. Supervisor Ovid.
Yeah. Looking at this, I think that there's 2 points that need to be brought up. I think the applicant's family brought up one of them. The other one, I think the finding on this, it has to be as a replacement, not new development, because it is replacing existing units. Now, you can probably try to define it, but I think in the finding we would want to know if these are replacements. And in such, that would have a reflection on the need for the requirement of the lateral access. And the other one, when you start talking about if only 800 feet is the difference between the other barn and what was replacement in terms of the septic tank and what improvements to the house was, then what you're looking at, again, is dollar relationship, because the value of the lateral access far exceeds any of the amount of improvements that are being made on the property. And I'd be able to make a motion whenever you're ready.
I have Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There seems to be the impression that because this project was combined into one permit, that it's that act that triggered the requirements for the lighting and also for the lateral access offered to dedicate. Could you speak to that, someone from planning staff?
Yes, Ryan Hostetter, county planning staff. A little bit back into time, the applicants started doing this under correct permits. They were doing it the right way. They came in for construction permits to remodel the house, and the project was piecemealed into several construction permits for different things on remodeling the house. You know, it was at that time Matt Varvel, our building inspector, went out there, and he's a little bit familiar with the requirements for coastal appealable sites and what requires a use permit. And he noticed that the combination of all the piecemealing of the building permits into one cumulative project would require a minor use permit because it included grading for a new septic system and et cetera. So he asked the applicant's contractor to stop work, and the contractor agreed to do so. And the applicant then was told to come in for the minor use permit for the whole project. And because it's a discretionary permit, that's when the access is required under our ordinance.
If they'd continued to just do one project at a time, getting one permit at a time, the issue that really sticks with me is the fact that they're increasing the size of the barn significantly. And that isn't a replacement. That's new construction. And I don't really have a problem with the septic system, simply because what was there was quite old and probably not functioning, and that is a replacement. It's one septic system for another. They didn't increase the number of bathrooms or the size of the house or the demand for the septic system, but the fact that the barn is more than what was there, in my mind, qualifies as new construction, and then any criteria that goes along with new construction in the coastal zone should apply. I understand the concern about security lighting, and I would agree with the notion of going ahead and allowing security lighting that wasn't on a sensor or wasn't on a timer, though they'd probably want to put it on a timer so it doesn't go, or at least a photocell, so it doesn't burn during the daylight hours, but shield it and use it for security purposes because it's a remote location and they have had problems with that. But I do think in the spirit of maintaining coastal access, and because there is new development on the site by a significantly larger barn, that we should require the offer to dedicate that area just within China Harbor, as the staff has modified its recommendation to do so. So that would be my preference.
Supervisor Lenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My heart goes out to the family in this case. So you have a process that's been going on for 10 years, and obviously through no fault of their own or no fault of the county. But by doing the right thing and stopping and doing what county asked and not doing either piecemeal or one permit at a time, do we have a net effect of we're actually penalizing or punishing them to the sense is if you want to do the right thing and bring all this together and get them up, then you have to do all these other additional requirements. I think we need to consider what the comments the Farm Bureau made in their letter. This is an ag operation. You have to increase the size of a barn sometimes for your ag operation. I disagree with my colleague, Mr. Patterson. I don't think this is a significant increase to a barn of that size. We're looking at a few hundred feet. However, we're not grading. We're replacing a septic system. It seems both reasonable and prudent to have a light that's on all the time for security reasons, for the property owners, for the people that are there, for the neighbors to walk by. We encourage those things in neighborhood watch. So it just seems to me that we've placed an undue burden because they chose to follow a process and didn't piecemeal or get one permit at a time, that now by doing the right thing, they're held to a different standard or asked to do a little bit more, and that's where I'm having the conflict. And so I'm thinking that, there's an exception here because based on the totality of the circumstances in that I don't see this reasonable to demand that coastal access because of that. And that's the problem I'm having because I don't see that the addition of the barn triggers that or crosses that threshold. If the house is actually smaller, they're remodeling, they're doing things like that, it just doesn't seem to rise to that level.
Supervisor Ovid?
Fine, I'm ready to make a motion. My motion would be to uphold the appeal, eliminate condition number 8, which is the lateral, modify condition number 3, and remove the terms timers and sensors, but leave the shielding in. The reason the findings would be is that my finding is that it is a replacement remodel project, that the lateral would have potential interference with the ag operation, and that the economic value for the additional 800 square foot of the barn is exceeded by the value of the lateral access if it were added.
You're adding condition 15?
And adding condition 16.
15.
Okay, because I eliminated 8, that's right. That renumber.
And the final condition, was that shared with the applicant?
Yeah. The one on the...
Indemnification?
Indemnification, you got it. You don't have a problem with that, do you, Pat? The indemnification condition?
Pat, you need to come to the microphone so we're able to record your remark.
While he's coming up, can I ask one question about condition number 3? I believe that staff was recommending the change to 3, so what he's suggesting is the current 3? Is that right?
Excuse me, Ryan Hostetter, planning staff. I think that in number 3, we just remove that entire middle sentence. So that will be the first sentence and the last sentence. So the applicant shall provide details on any proposed lighting. All exterior lighting shall be shielded with full cutoff shields.
Okay, so the second sentence is completely deleted then?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Pat Molnar. I just read this indemnification thing, and I haven't consulted with the owners of the property yet, so it's just got sprung on me, too. Sorry.
I just wanted to know that before we made a motion that you as an applicant were aware of the additional condition.
It's holding the yes. county harmless.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a motion. Is there a second to the motion?
Yes, there's a second with the addition of item okay. 15.
Moved by Supervisor.
We have some also revised findings that we need to make as well before this is finished.
Okay. Is this a tentative motion or this can be a final motion?
I think you need to ask council, but I think...
If we can prepare the findings right now and put them into
okay,
the
let's,
motion...
Let's give it a try.
...and proceed.
So start from the beginning. We would on page C6...
Would you get closer to the microphone? We can
I'm
hear
sorry.
You better. No problem.
On page C6-16... We have to revise finding H.
C-616 is...
It's not right.
...is condition of approval. Our findings start on C-614.
Findings, let me get the right...
Okay, C-6...
6-7, Ryan.
C-615.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Let me get to... Well, finding H. Supervisor Ovitt had some specific language, I think, that related to that. I didn't quite get all that. I apologize.
Okay. Mike Wilkin, County Planning Staff. Maybe I can take a stab at the finding H, incorporating what Supervisor Ovitt mentioned. The new finding would read, the proposed use is in conformity with the public access and recreation policies of Chapter 3 of the California Coastal Act, et cetera. Because lateral access is not required because there are no additional structures being constructed, there is no change in the historic use of the property, lateral access would interfere with agricultural use, the barn will be a replacement structure, and the improvement value of improvements would be far less than the value of the lateral access. There will be no increase in the intensity of the use and no nexus between the proposed improvements and the requirements for coastal access.
That's good.
Does the motion maker and the second concur?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. A roll call, please.
There was more, wasn't
there? Was there anything else from the staff?
I think that condition 1A. It says after the comma and amendment of the coastal access condition, if we can change amendment to removal.
Removal?
Removal.
Yeah. Thank
you. We're removing condition 8. Let's see. And then I think that was the last.
Okay. Are we satisfied? Madam Clerk, you have it all?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Lindholm?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Okay. That concludes today's meeting. Happy election day.
Go vote.